April, this month, is Poetry Month, and next week, on Wednesday the 25th, the Alana Union Bookstore and the University of Illinois Press will celebrate poetry with a night of poetry at the campus bookstore. The event gets underway at 6 o'clock Wednesday evening in the Author's Corner of the bookstore, located on South Wright Street in Champaign. Two of the press's noted poets will read from their work and invite others to do the same. The night of poetry will feature Kevin Stein, a professor of English at Bradley University, and Michael Van Walligen, professor of English at the University of Illinois. Michael Van Walligen is my guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. He's the author of five books of poetry, including More Trouble with the Obvious, for which he won the Lamont Poetry Prize. His latest book is The Last Neanderthal. Michael, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us this afternoon.
I'm very delighted to be here.
What is it about poetry that demands it be read out loud?
Well, it invites reading out loud. I mean, it's something that, in writing it, you hear in your mind, and so that has to be reproduced as sound. It seems to me, since that's so much a part of writing it.
Mm-hmm. When you sit down and begin to write, do you feel a sense of rhythm, literally?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. It happens very often that I'll have a feeling for the sound that I would like to achieve long before any idea of what I'm writing happens to me. So I'm just trying to keep a certain kind of energy alive, a certain kind of tone alive very often. Not always, but very often that's the way a poem proceeds.
The title poem of the new collection, The Last Neanderthal.
Yes.
Did you begin thinking about this poem? Did it begin to happen while you were in a doctor's office?
I had been in the doctor's office. And one sits down and plays around on the typewriter, and this poem just began to happen.
Yeah.
I guess I was listening too, I think, to WILL, and there was a paleoanthropologist on. His name was Johnson, I think, perhaps. I don't remember, but he was interviewed too a little previous to this poem.
Yeah. Do you have the book with you?
Yes, I do.
Would you read the poem for us?
Sure. The Last Neanderthal. Browsing in the waiting room through dog-eared time, he reads how all over the world frogs are disappearing. A thinning, it's supposed, of the ozone. And then it's his turn. Blood pressure, prostate palpation, followed by the usual questions. Any trouble getting it up? Painful or bloody urination? Not so far. But one day, he thinks, it could all be different. The light becoming suddenly brighter, ominous, and the doctor frowning meanwhile, snapping off his rubber gloves. After that, surgery, chemotherapy, the rest of his life in diapers. But for now, except for a niggling, slight elevation in blood pressure, he's okay and deserves a handshake. Keep up the good work, exercise, and take this form to the front desk. We need your group insurance number. And soon he's driving home again, curiously aware of the littered roadside, the look of late March, blossoms of styrofoam in paper cups, shivering in the stiff brown bushes, while overhead drift clouds of lead, a sky that might rain anything. Dead dogs and cats, for instance, car junk, disemboweled sofas, even the radio stinks. Constant static, interrupting a talk show of some kind. Some paleoanthropologist, it seems, talking about our human origins, and people calling in with questions. What about those Neanderthals, then? Were they human or not? And why, if they were as smart as you seem to think, did they all die out? Okay, I'll hang up now and listen. At which point, the station disappears, and there's nothing on the air again but noise, a a sound like leaves, perhaps, rattling in an empty cave somewhere along the Rhine. It's almost dark. Nearby, the last Neanderthal hunkers over a small fire, roasting a frog on a stick. A man much like himself, but bigger and covered with hair. His low forehead wrinkled suddenly by something he hears out there. A car whizzing by in another dimension. It's possible. If he can imagine it, why not? Meanwhile, the frog looks almost done. A small frog, the size of a baseball, or an enlarged prostate, maybe. He can see it clearly. A middle-aged man, much like himself.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for reading that. The Last Neanderthal.
Yes.
It's amazing to me all these things that come together in this poem. And so many things that wouldn't seem necessarily to come together, but there they are.
Yeah, I love that when that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a theme, do you suppose, that ties the poems in The Last Neanderthal together?
Well, maybe the theme of extinction in various forms. I mean, the loss of innocence being one of them. An awareness of mortality, I think, a little keener than in any of my previous books.
Mm. The dawning of middle age, I guess.
Yeah, huh? Something like that.
Yeah. There's a lot about memory,
I think, too. Yeah.
Maybe you'd read another poem. I'm thinking about... Was this the book that has the elephant?
Yes, sure.
Yeah.
I think I'd read that myself. Yeah.
That's a great one.
It's called The Elephant in Winter.
Right.
And it mentions a place in Detroit called the Belle Isle Zoo. Belle Isle is a park in the middle of the Detroit River and had a small zoo. And it also was interlaced with canals, so in the wintertime, you could skate on them. This is about some of that experience. The elephant in winter. During the winter, of course, they kept the elephant inside. His house, or dungeon really, was practically hidden by brush and backed up to a small canal just off the intricate main canal behind Detroit's Belle Isle Zoo, on which you could skate for miles. Forever, if you happened to forget, in a rattling wind beyond surmise or earshot of the lost pavilion, just which way you'd come exactly, now that all the trees were dark, the footbridge wrong completely. And it's right about here, in little thudding intervals at first, I felt the ice begin to move. Okay, sure, I thought, snow trucks, the muffled banging of some inscrutable pump, or boiler maybe, until, apropos of nothing but that, a full-grown male elephant goes suddenly berserk a scant 10 feet away, the whole 5-ton concussive bulk of him exploding into high-pitched screams and a scattering of creeper twigs every time he throws himself, kaboom, against the icy wall he lived behind. That much, at least, is crystal clear. But afterward, I don't know. Perhaps I fainted or went to shock somehow, only to be rescued later by wolves. Or maybe my father showed up finally, blinking his tiny, puzzled headlights right where he was supposed to meet me a good 2 hours ago with the car. But isn't that the way with children? Things that must have truly happened end up blurred, inextricably confused with dreams, so that, years later, a prized inheritance, a china cabinet tinkling with the dishes and crystal my mother only used at Christmas, eerily recalls, as much as anything, that dreamlike moment on the ice. Or the labyrinth, in fact, of home itself, the angry stirring of the Minotaur, whom I've just woke up somehow, and now, by Christ, he's had enough, whose least footstep shakes the house.
Mm, the elephant in winter.
Yes.
Wonderful things come together in this poem, too.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of elephant and elephant never forgets. The slippery ice of memory. Wonderful.
Yeah, well, thank you so much.
Yeah. How does a poem, when do you know that's it? And know to stop and leave it alone?
Everyone, I think, has a slightly different way of doing it. And it's been said by other poets better than me that one never really finishes a poem when you just abandon it. But I do have a sense of when a poem is finished. I make many, many revisions as I'm writing, and when I find what the central metaphor is in the poem, then the writing goes much quicker, and it becomes just a question of getting the tone right and getting the diction right. And I'm very often writing in some kind of minimal form, like stanzas. And so, you know, paying attention and getting that right is something that mm-hmm. you can feel conclusive about.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that on the one hand you have to let yourself go, you have to be free, but on the other hand, you're very much a craftsperson.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, measuring and being precise and
like
a carpenter.
Yes, yeah. Or a sculptor. You know, it's that's very important to me.
Hmm. Yeah. When you get together with Professor Stein next week at the bookstore, do you have anything in particular planned? Are you going to read specifically from the latest collection?
Well, I think I'll probably read a few poems from this collection, and then I'm working on another book, which is essentially finished, a new and selected edition of my work. So I'll read some new poems from that, I think.
Hmm. Do you ever read at a reading for the general public poems that are not finished yet?
No.
No. That would be interesting.
Yeah, it might be very interesting, but it'd scare me to death.
Oh, well, I want to thank you. I'm sorry we don't have more time this afternoon. Maybe at some point we can talk together for an extended period of time.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Lewis.
Michael Van Walligen has been my guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine.